Welcome. You've given us some fascinating material, and today on the Deep Dive, we're tackling a big one, the human mind. Our goal is, well, to pull out the most captivating and useful insights, giving you a real understanding without getting, you know, bogged down in endless details.
Right.
Think of this as your express route to some truly mind-bending knowledge.
Exactly. We're going to explore how we try to understand our own minds and brains, and the different ways we build models to make sense of it all.
Okay.
This journey will take us through philosophy, where we question the nature of the mind itself, psychology, which looks at our behavior and inner states.
Right.
Neuroscience, exploring the biological machinery, linguistics, examining the power of language, and even artificial intelligence.
AI, yeah.
Where we attempt to build minds in silicon, all to feed your desire for knowledge that's both deep and digestible.
To really set the stage for this exploration, consider something Richard Feynman, the physicist, once said.
Oh, yeah.
The world looks so different after learning science. It's like a veil is lifted, you know?
That's a great quote.
And then there's that profound old saying, Lorha, you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. It speaks to how empowering understanding can be.
It does, and it echoes beautifully with that ancient inscription. Above the entrance to the temple of Apollo at Delphi. Poznaj samego sebe. Know thyself.
Know thyself. Classic.
Often attributed to Socrates, this timeless wisdom is really at the heart of our discussion today.
Yeah.
How does your own mind actually operate?
Okay, so let's jump in. Our sources explain how cognitive science is this amazing blend, really, of different fields, all trying to decipher the mind.
It's a synthesis.
Exactly. You've got philosophy asking the fundamental, what is it? Questions. Then psychology observes our actions and those internal experiences, thoughts, feelings.
Right, the mental states.
Neuroscience investigates the physical brain, the hardware, so to speak.
The wetware.
Yeah. Psycholinguistics explores how language shapes and reflects thought. And then you have computational modeling, where they try to create artificial systems that think and learn.
It's a real interdisciplinary effort. Absolutely.
Yeah. And what's truly interesting, I think, is this fundamental human urge to understand ourselves. We've made incredible progress understanding the world around us, electricity, communication networks, even space travel.
Huge leaps.
Yet when we turn that gaze inward towards our own minds, we find ourselves still grappling with some really basic questions.
It's almost a bit paradoxical, isn't it?
Totally. And our sources highlight some long-held beliefs, or maybe myths, as Steven Pinker calls them, that might actually be holding us back.
Ah, yes. Pinker's points.
He points to the idea of the tabula rasa, the blank slate theory.
Right.
But the concept of the noble savage, that humans are inherently good in their natural state, and the ghost in the machine, this separation of mind and body or spirit and matter.
If we step back and look at those myths, they do seem to offer a more, well, flattering picture of humanity, don't they?
They do. More comforting, maybe.
But the argument in our sources that these comforting narratives might actually prevent us from seeing the truth about how our minds really work with all their complexities and, frankly, imperfections.
Right. And when you consider things like brain damage or mental illness, it becomes increasingly clear that our sense of self is deeply connected to the brain. It really is.
Very much so.
It makes you wonder why we still treat mental illnesses so differently from other physical ailments.
That stigma is still so strong.
After all, it's all part of the same biological system, isn't it? Brain included.
Absolutely.
The growing understanding of the brain's role, it not only demystifies mental illness, but also kind of compels us to reconsider that artificial divide we've created between physical and mental well-being.
A division that has significant societal consequences, yeah. This raises a really important point about societal attitudes. And it also emphasizes that while the brain is central, it's not the entire picture.
No.
To truly understand our inner lives, our joys, our sorrows, our moral struggles, how we react in the complex situations life throws at us, we need to consider more than just neurons firing.
Exactly. Philosophy helps us wrestle with those big questions of meaning and morality. Cultural anthropology shows us how different societies shape thought and behavior.
Different contexts.
Yeah, and even literature offers profound insights into the human condition. There's that great example in the material about an antelope.
Oh, the jumping antelope. Yeah.
Jumping high to signal its strength to predators. You can't explain that just by looking at its brain, can you?
Not at all. You need the whole picture, the predator-prey dynamic, the evolutionary pressures, the whole ecological context.
It's like trying to understand a smartphone just by looking at its circuit board.
Right. The analogy of the mobile phone is really helpful here. It illustrates the different levels of understanding.
Mm.
You have the physical components, the chips, the battery, the screen, but then you can delve into the physics of semiconductors, the chemistry of the battery, the optics of the display.
So many layers.
It uses radio waves, so you need to understand electromagnetism. And of course, there's the software, the operating system, the apps that requires computer science. No single person fully grasps every single aspect required to create a cell phone from scratch.
No way. So with the mind, it's a similar idea, many interconnected layers of explanation.
Precisely.
And this leads to a fascinating question our sources pose. Do we actually want to fully understand the mind?
Hmm. Good question.
Or are we maybe more invested in feeling unique, special, perhaps even a bit mysterious,
mm-hmm.
somehow separate from the natural world?
That resistance to fully understanding ourselves is quite noticeable, I think. There is a tendency to question any scientific progress in this area, to constantly raise doubts.
Why do you think that is?
Well, it's almost as if acknowledging a biological basis for our thoughts and feelings somehow diminishes our sense of self or our sense of wonder for some people.
Yeah, maybe it feels less magical.
Could be. And that brings us to a really fundamental question. Can the mind even understand itself?
Right, like the eye trying to see itself directly.
Exactly. Our sources delve into what we even mean by understanding. It seems to require a language to describe it, a conceptual framework to organize it, some kind of model of the world to relate it to.
And the ability to connect new information to what we already know.
Yes. And what's so interesting here is the contrast between traditional, often myth-based explanations and the scientific approach.
How so?
Traditional explanations often provide simple, comforting answers to big questions, but they tend to lack specific details and are often rooted in our ego's need for validation, maybe.
Okay.
The scientific model, on the other hand, thrives on developing useful metaphors, asking very detailed questions, being aware of the limits of our knowledge, that meta-knowledge.
Knowing what you don't know.
Exactly. And constantly questioning what we think we know, always demanding evidence.
You see this difference play out, like, with the creationist viewpoint versus evolutionary theory.
Good example.
Creationism offers a complete narrative, but when you start asking specific questions about, say, the diversity of life, the fossil record, genetic similarities, evolution, backed by just a vast amount of evidence.
Came genetics, paleontology.
It provides a far more detailed and consistent explanation. Think about why so many different animals, from giraffes to mice, have the same 7 neck vertebrae.
Evolution offers a compelling and testable explanation for that. Homology.
Right.
Exactly. And the resilience of non-scientific explanations, even when faced with evidence, is remarkable.
It really is.
Our sources discuss how simple, easily grasped ideas like illness being a punishment from a higher power or the belief in witchcraft can be incredibly persuasive and resistant to change.
We see examples throughout history.
And even today, yeah, of leaders and individuals being influenced by astrological predictions or other non-scientific beliefs. It happens.
It really underscores that to understand the human mind, you have to understand its internal model of the world, not just its neural wiring.
That's key.
Knowing how the brain processes information isn't enough. You need to know what kind of information it's processing and how it interprets that information.
So fully understanding yourself means being able to predict your own reactions and behavior in various situations. But is our own self-assessment always the most accurate?
Probably not always. Do we always see ourselves more clearly than others do? Maybe not.
This leads to the idea that our self is not a fixed entity. As the ancient Greek philosopher Heraclitus famously said, puntere,
everything flows.
Everything flows, everything changes. Our perspectives and beliefs often stem from these broad underlying worldviews rather than a rigorous process of verification.
Which is why when we encounter new information, it's so important to ask those critical questions our sources provide.
Absolutely. Like, when was this information created? What's the purpose behind it? Is it genuine explanation or is it manipulation?
Can the claims be checked against established knowledge? Are the people presenting this information actual experts in the relevant field?
And is simply relying on tradition a good enough reason to believe something is true?
Right. Think about traditional Chinese medicine or folk remedies. Without careful, systematic study, how do we really know what's effective and what isn't?
The historical examples of the phlogiston theory for combustion and the caloric theory for heat are perfect illustrations.
Yeah, those were big ideas in their time.
Intelligent people developed them, but ultimately, systematic experimentation showed they didn't actually explain the phenomena. They were eventually replaced by better evidence-based theories.
And it's kind of similar today with how we sometimes use the word energy as this vague pseudoscientific explanation for things we don't quite grasp.
Exactly. Our sources rightly point out that without a well-defined theory and experimental evidence, it's just a label, not a real explanation. True understanding requires fitting new pieces into our existing framework of knowledge.
Precisely. Creating a truly accurate self model would require understanding how our brains would react in every possible scenario, which sounds impossible.
It's a monumental, perhaps impossible, task. Mm. And as our sources remind us, our self is constantly evolving anyway. So the idea of achieving a perfect, unchanging understanding of ourselves is likely a pipe dream.
Now, our sources touch on how we think about understanding in the context of AI, like with large language models. And those interesting diagrams on IQmatrix.com that show mental states as connected nodes.
Those are quite visual.
They really highlight that to learn and understand, we need a framework, a kind of map of reality where new information can be placed. Otherwise, as the material vividly puts it, we end up with a Wielki Fiumetnik.
The great trash can. Just a disorganized heap of unconnected facts, no structure.
Exactly. Which leads us to a second major doubt our sources raise. How can we truly know anything with certainty?
The certainty question.
The poet William Blake captured this idea beautifully when he wrote about seeing infinity in a grain of sand. Even the smallest thing has endless properties.
It's a powerful image, isn't it? Reminds us of the complexity of everything. And our senses, as amazing as they are, only give us information about how our brains respond to stimuli.
Right, from the outside world and from within our own bodies.
We don't have direct, unfiltered access to reality itself. Our brain is constantly filtering, interpreting, building a model of the world that it finds useful for navigating and acting.
So, as our sources put it metaphorically, we see or feel only the states of our brain.
Think about optical illusions, that perception of movement in a still image. It isn't out there.
It's in your head.
It's how our visual system processes the information. And because we primarily interact with the external world, our cognitive focus is usually directed outward. The inner workings, the processes of knowing, are somewhat hidden from our direct awareness.
It's that concept of belief-based realism. We tend to see what we are, in some way, primed to see what aligns with our existing beliefs and what we deem important.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, we often get stuck in our own point of view, thinking our perspective is the only valid one.
Yeah, that egocentric bias is strong.
And it's important to remember that intelligence alone doesn't guarantee a deep understanding of our own minds. Very smart people can hold on to strange beliefs and use their intelligence to rationalize them.
Absolutely. Everything we experience is shaped by the structure of our minds and brains. The objects of the mind, these categories and concepts we perceive, are the result of complex brain processes.
Like the self-driving car example.
Exactly. It doesn't react to raw reality. It reacts to its internal model of reality, which might categorize a shadow as an obstacle.
Okay.
Similarly, when we see an animal, we categorize it dog, cat, monkey. An expert might have a more detailed categorization, but we are still thinking in terms of these abstract categories created by our minds.
The philosopher Immanuel Kant had some profound insights into this with his idea of a priori knowledge.
Ah, Kant. Foundational stuff.
Think of it as the built-in software of our minds, mm-hmm. the fundamental ways we're wired to understand the world even before direct experience. Kant argued concepts like space and time aren't learned through senses, but are inherent structures our minds use to organize information.
So certain observations feel obvious because they fit these pre-existing mental frameworks.
Right. Our perceptions and thoughts seem to be about the external world, but in a very real sense, they are about our brain's model of that world.
And the scientific model for understanding this world requires a very precise language.
Hmm.
Terms like time, space, and energy have very specific meanings within scientific theories.
Which are often quite different from their everyday, more metaphorical uses.
Definitely. Which leads to that classic philosophical debate, where does beauty reside? Is it objective, in the thing itself, like Plato might say?
Or is it in the eye of the beholder, as Kant suggested?
Our sources lean towards Kant's view, emphasizing that our ability to perceive and understand is fundamentally shaped and limited by the structure of our own minds. The mind acts like a reflection of the world, but it's a reflection filtered and processed by the brain's inherent mechanisms.
But that doesn't necessarily mean there's no such thing as objective truth, though, does it?
No, not necessarily. Scientific laws, for example, seem to hold true regardless of who discovers them. Quantum physics experiments consistently yield the same results.
Okay.
The fact that we can describe something in different ways doesn't mean those descriptions can't all be objectively valid from their particular perspectives. Think of 100 photographers taking pictures of the same scene.
Different angles, different lighting.
Exactly. Each photo will be different, capturing a unique angle and moment, but they can all be considered objective records of what was there.
It's fascinating to look back at how people have historically viewed the brain. Aristotle thinking it just cooled the blood.
Seems bizarre now, right? Thankfully, Hippocrates got much closer way back in ancient Greece, recognizing the brain as the origin of emotions, thoughts, feelings.
Yeah, but even today, the idea that our mind is simply a function of our physical brain can feel, well, counterintuitive. It clashes with our direct, subjective experience of consciousness.
It does. But the scientific model, even though it doesn't always provide that immediate intuitive comfort, has proven to be the most effective and comprehensive way to understand the world, including ourselves.
It allows us to answer detailed questions and forms the bedrock of all our technology.
And science is essentially a continuous process of questioning, a constant reminder that our understanding is always incomplete. There are no absolute, unquestionable truths. It's a rigorous set of procedures for developing and testing hypotheses.
And that brings us to a third major area of doubt, the prevalence of pseudoscientific theories and therapies. How do we distinguish between what's genuinely effective and what's, well, not?
Yeah, that's a huge challenge. Our sources use the example of bloodletting, a practice that persisted for centuries despite lacking any evidence of benefit and likely causing harm.
Incredible.
It took nearly 300 years after William Harvey demonstrated blood circulation for it to largely fall out of favor. And even today, look at the claims for many dietary supplements.
Oh, yeah.
Scientific studies show a significant portion lack reliable evidence of effectiveness. It always comes back to asking critical questions. How do we know this works? Who was it tested on? How strong is the evidence? Side effects? Long-term effects?
Rigorous study needed.
Exactly. And our natural human tendency to believe, which likely stems from our early childhood dependence, can make us vulnerable to accepting claims without sufficient scrutiny.
We want to believe.
Science, in contrast, is all about systematic observation, rigorous testing, critical thinking, and a willingness to challenge and potentially disprove existing ideas. Pseudoscience often relies on appeals to authority or tradition.
So we should always be asking, where does this info come from? What are the logical foundations? Are there more plausible scientific explanations based on genetics, neuroscience, rather than, say, astrology?
Absolutely. And what do we know with high confidence? Our smartphones work flawlessly based on quantum physics. GPS is incredibly accurate, even needing corrections from Einstein's relativity.
We verify physics daily.
Right. So scientific knowledge includes both well-established facts we're very certain about and ongoing research needing more validation. It's a spectrum.
Unfortunately, critical thinking isn't always everyone's strong suit, which makes people susceptible to courses promising unrealistic outcomes.
True. And the objections people raise against science, while common, often don't hold up under scrutiny. The argument that science can't prove it's the only way to truth doesn't really undermine its effectiveness for understanding the natural world.
We just need to look at the alternatives, right? Mm-hmm. What's more likely? Seeing a ghost is a trick of the light and brain interpretation, or an actual spirit visitation.
The former can be studied and understood through psychology and neuroscience. The latter, less so.
And even if science isn't the only domain we have, art, music, ethics, that doesn't automatically validate other methods for understanding the physical world.
Exactly. If other methods claim tangible effects, those effects should be testable, objectively evaluated, not just based on feelings or anecdotes.
Like energy healing.
Well, while there might not be a measurable biophysical field, the expectation of healing can trigger real physiological changes, the placebo effect, and that can be studied scientifically.
Okay. The point that science can't measure everything is also brought up a lot.
It is. And it's possible there are phenomena we don't yet have tools for. But if these phenomena have real physical effects, eventually we should be able to detect them through observation and experiment. If magic or prayer worked predictably,
we'd see the patterns.
We should. So far, systematic studies haven't generally shown convincing evidence for that kind of predictable effect.
And the idea that science isn't everything. It doesn't address beauty, morality, spiritual experience. That's absolutely correct.
Science doesn't aim to evoke emotions like art or create existential myths like religion might. But when those realms make factual claims about influencing the physical world that contradict scientific understanding,
then science provides the framework for distinguishing illusion from reality.
Precisely. Maybe it's better to emphasize whether something is based on systematic observation and rational principles rather than just like labeling it scientific or unscientific.
Our sources even touch on the fascinating history of science in the Islamic world's golden age.
Mm-hmm.
And the complex factors in its later decline.
Yeah, the influence of thinkers like Al-Ghazali and the doctrine of occasionalism, the idea that natural laws weren't causal, but God's direct actions moment to moment played a role in shifting focus away from empirical inquiry.
Wow. It's a powerful reminder that correlation doesn't necessarily mean causation.
A cognitive trap our brains constantly fall into, seeking meaning and patterns everywhere.
And there's a distinction between intellectual understanding, that analytical process, and intuitive understanding that guides our actions, which isn't always easily articulated.
Right, relies more on implicit learning experience. Unfortunately, there are often powerful vested interests that actively question scientific findings when they threaten profits or ideologies.
Tobacco, climate change.
Pharmaceutical industry sometimes. These groups often employ skilled communicators who can be very persuasive, even while misrepresenting the science.
Which really underscores the critical importance of evaluating the credibility and potential biases of our information sources. Always.
Always. And understanding itself isn't just cold intellectual. It's cognitive and emotional, engaging various brain parts, often with that satisfying aha feeling.
Like new observations sticking to our existing expectations.
Exactly. But acquiring entirely new ways of thinking can be harder as adults, partly because we have this vast existing knowledge network and brain plasticity decreases somewhat.
We literally think in ways our brains are structured neurodeterminism, though experience still shapes us.
Right. The upside is, generally, we understand far more than previous generations because we learn foundational concepts early and take them for granted.
The historical difficulties even brilliant thinkers had with negative or complex numbers highlight how our frameworks develop. Cognitive mathematics is shedding light on why those were so counterintuitive.
Even water being made of two explosive gases was a major conceptual hurdle.
Makes you wonder if we ever truly understand new concepts or just get used to them. Max Planck was skeptical of his own quantum theory for ages.
Viewing it as a mathematical trick, yeah. His quote about new ideas being accepted only when the old guard dies out speaks volumes about resistance to paradigm shifts.
The brain is fundamentally a pattern recognition machine, creating beliefs, seeking associations to make sense of experience from perception to self-image.
Which is crucial, but also leads to confirmation bias. Our beliefs shape what we notice and remember.
So understanding is integrating new concepts into our existing cognitive web. If it doesn't connect easily, it's often rejected or misunderstood. Not enough strong neural connections to central concepts.
But it's important to clarify. Understanding doesn't require knowing every single detail. We understand gravity makes a leaf fall, but can't predict its exact landing in wind.
We understand phones use electromagnetic waves without knowing all the circuit details.
Exactly. We can grasp fundamental principles of mind without knowing every synapse interaction.
And while philosophers often focus on objective truth, cognitive science shifts emphasis slightly towards understanding the process of forming beliefs and concepts, whether they perfectly mirror reality or not.
So back to that big question, can the mind truly understand itself? Our sources suggest yes at the level of general principles and mechanisms.
But expecting simple, definitive answers about every minute detail of consciousness might be unrealistic.
Consider a hydrogen atom physicist still explore its subtleties, or the staggering complexity of a single biological cell.
It's overwhelming.
It is. But even if no single person grasps every detail, collective knowledge is vast, and we increasingly rely on computer models for complexity beyond individual minds.
So maybe not complete exhaustive understanding, but key principles and useful models.
Right. Physicists don't constantly ask, what is time? They measure and predict its effects. Biologists study life without a perfect definition. Maybe cognitive science can similarly shift from what is consciousness to rigorously studying the conditions and brain structures associated with conscious states.
The constant refrain "we don't understand" can be misleading sometimes. If you look closely at specific research, it's often hard to find something we absolutely cannot comprehend at some level.
Perhaps the feeling of lack of understanding comes from using overly broad, ill-defined terms like consciousness, memory, intelligence. In psychology, operational definitions specifying how something is measured are often more productive.
We have tests for intelligence, creativity. Mm-hmm. They might not correlate perfectly, suggesting different underlying functions, but the data is still valuable.
And it's reassuring that some fundamental knowledge is stable genes, neuron types. Our detailed understanding evolves rapidly, but core concepts endure. It's like taking small steps on a long journey.
Every new concept builds on existing theories, though advanced ones require significant study.
Our sources then touch upon Gödel's incompleteness theorem and the common misconception it limits AI.
That comes up a lot.
While it shows limits in formal systems, it doesn't necessarily impose practical limits on flexible AI learning systems today, which aren't based on fixed axioms in the same way. Human cognitive limits, processing speed, working memory are likely far more significant practical limitations than Gödel's theorem for AI.
The material also mentions paradoxes, like the liar paradox, this statement is false, and emphasizes that understanding the mind often means reducing brain activity descriptions to the simplest level needed for explanation.
Relating to reductionism, how fields build on each other, quantum mechanics to chemistry to biology to medicine, but also recognizing emergence complex systems having new qualities beyond the sum of their parts.
It's like Mill observed. Gazzaniga's point about neurons not fully explaining mental states is emergence.
Exactly. You can't predict a hungry person reaching for food just by analyzing their body's biochemistry.
Kant's idea that we perceive what evolution prepared us for, shaped by interests, leading to an imperfect world model, that's key too.
He leads to radical constructivism. Knowledge isn't passive reflection, but active construction based on our cognitive system interpreting experiences. We only directly access brain states.
Does that mean objective knowledge is impossible?
Our sources argue it highlights the need to be aware of our cognitive limits and actively try to transcend them. Mathematics offers a more general language for reality, often beyond everyday intuition. Which brings us back to, is a model of the mind itself?
Deep question. The sources mention cybernetics, self-regulating systems.
And contrast that with New Age claims of knowledge through meditation, often critiquing reliance on discredited experiments and emphasizing scientific verification.
Language limitations are also noted discrete symbols for a continuous world, complex causality.
But science has self-correction through questioning assumptions. Though this can be hindered by external factors, industries funding biased research, creating ignorance, agnotology.
And the internet age challenge misinformation, memes.
Huge challenge. Yet scientific discovery has evolved, becoming more theory-driven, fueling technology. Predicting specific future events is harder, though.
The feeling of understanding, the aha moment, is described as cognitive-emotional, brain reward systems involved. New info sticking.
And acquiring new frameworks is harder in adulthood, neurodeterminism, cognitive entrenchment. Though we still learn and generally understand more than past generations due to early learning.
Even historical struggles with math concepts show how understanding evolves. Do we truly understand or just get used to things? Planck's skepticism.
The brain's pattern recognition forms beliefs, self-image, but also confirmation bias. Understanding is integration. Difficult if new ideas don't fit existing frameworks.
But understanding doesn't require knowing every detail. Philosophers focused on truth. Cognitive science focuses on understanding processes, belief formation.
The complexity of biology reminds us of individual limits, highlighting computational models' role. Science seeks general principles, not every detail.
Physicists don't endlessly define time. Biologists study life without one perfect definition. Maybe cognitive science can focus on conditioned structures of consciousness.
The "we don't understand" refrain can be misleading. Often the issue is broad, ill-defined terms. Operational definitions in psychology are more productive. Tests measure aspects of intelligence, creativity. Results are valuable, even if not perfectly correlated.
And fundamental knowledge, genes, neurons, is stable, while details evolve. It's incremental progress. Advanced theories need study, but build on existing ones.
Gödel's theorem's limits on AI are often overstated compared to practical AI approaches and human cognitive limits.
Symbolic paradoxes exist. Reductionism helps, but emergence is key. Complex systems have novel properties. Gazzaniga again.
Kant's idea of perception shaped by evolution interests leads to constructivism knowledge as active construction. We access brain states.
Doesn't mean objectivity is impossible, but highlights need for awareness of cognitive limits. Math helps transcend intuition. Is a mind model the mind itself?
Cybernetic studies self-referential systems, contrasted with New Age claims lacking verification. Language limits exist. Science self-corrects, but faces challenges like agnotology, misinformation.
Discovery is more theory-driven now. Prediction is hard. Understanding is cognitive-emotional. Harder to learn new frameworks as adults, neurodeterminism. But we build on childhood learning.
Do we understand or habituate? Planck's doubt. Brain seeks patterns, confirmation bias. Understanding integrates into frameworks, doesn't require every detail. Cognitive science emphasizes understanding processes. We can grasp general principles, even if full self-comprehension is elusive.
So you see, in this deep dive, we've journeyed through a vast territory, from ancient wisdom and that timeless call to know thyself, to the cutting edge of cognitive science and the fascinating and sometimes perplexing world of artificial intelligence.
Some key insights for you, the learner, probably include the vital importance of approaching new information with a critical eye.
Definitely.
And being mindful of the inherent biases that can shape our perceptions. We've seen how drawing upon diverse fields of knowledge offers richer perspectives, and the ongoing synthesis of these approaches holds, well, tremendous promise for deepening our understanding of the mind.
And finally, maybe consider this. Given that our understanding of the world is fundamentally shaped by the processing within our own brains, how can we be truly certain that we are even asking the right questions about ourselves and the universe?
Ooh, that's a good one. Or, as artificial intelligence continues its rapid development, what profound new insights might it reveal about the fundamental nature of intelligence and consciousness?
Potentially challenging some of our most deeply held assumptions about the human mind.
Exactly. We encourage you to continue exploring these fascinating topics and perhaps revisit the source material you provided with these new perspectives in mind.
Until our next deep dive, keep that curiosity burning.